Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's past. Mark Levonier, your host for an hour of horror. Later on, Lights Out from 1942. But first, The Haunting Hour with a story called Occupation Murder, an NBC syndicated broadcast from 1945.
Stay where you are. Do not break the stillness of this moment. For this is a time of mystery. A time when imagination is free and moves forward swiftly, silently. This is the Haunting Hour. Occupation, murder. Those of us who have never stepped upon the stage and delved into a world of fantasy might believe that to do so would bring to one's mind and experience all that could never quite be grasped in real life. The actors, how perfectly they move, what excitement they entail, how straight they follow the paths of their planned destiny. Out of the portrait of real existence into a world of fantasy and fiction. And the players? What of them when the play is done? When they leave the world of make-believe for cold reality? But wait. Gregory Townsend's story can tell you better than I how life itself can plunge a man into conflicts of reality far greater than all the infinite imagination of the stage. It was a late summer afternoon when Gregory Townsend hurried into a little side street cafe to begin events of such a nature to bear careful consideration as to their probability were he to have acted them in a play.
Say, Al. Al Henley.
Hi, Greg.
I've got to see you right away. It's very important.
Can't you see that I've got company? Oh, this, by the way, is Miss Valentine Simpkins.
What a charming stage name. How do you do, my dear? I'm Gregory Townsend.
I'm pleased to know you. And Valentine Simpkins is my real name.
It's beautiful, honey. You're a natural for Broadway. Why, I wouldn't consider myself your press agent if you weren't.
Oh, you're too kind to me, Mr. Henley.
Wait, kid, I haven't even started.
I hope you'll forgive me, Miss Simpkins, but I must have a word with Al.
Oh, it's perfectly all right. I'll excuse myself.
Oh, stick around, honey. This won't take long. It never does.
This will, Henley.
Well, Mr. Henley, give me a buzz if you get my name in the papers.
It's a cinch, Valentine. I'll phone you tomorrow.
That will be charming. Goodbye, Mr. Townsend.
Goodbye.
Well.
Where did you discover that item of bric-a-brac, Al?
I'm protecting her from the advances of a punk named Dave Anderson. Know him? He's a professional shyster.
No, he's not a member of my club. Listen, Al. You've got to think of an idea that will put me on the front page.
What's the rush?
John Miller is casting his new play. I phoned him this morning asking for a chance at the lead.
He said no, of course.
No, not quite. He said he would have to have an actor with name value.
That lets you out, Greg.
Well, I'm not so sure. Oh, if you can only get me some decent publicity for a change. Something spectacular. I can land that part. Oh, it'll make me and you. I'll cut you in for a large percentage.
Well, that's nice of you, considering the fact it says just that in our contract.
Come on, Al, you think of something. Get me in the front pages.
Well, there's always one sure story.
Oh? What's that?
Murder.
Are you crazy?
No. I've got an idea that will make you one of the most publicized guys in the country, practically overnight.
You mean, commit murder?
Yeah. Guaranteed to work. Money refunded if you don't grab every front page.
Gosh, for a minute, I thought you really meant it, Al. Oh, come on now. Tell me, what the idea really is?
That's it. Homicide. You're going to commit murder, stand trial, and then be declared innocent.
I know you can guarantee the first two items of procedure, but what about the acquittal?
That's all very simple, Gregory. You're going to murder yourself.
What?
Oh, is the thought so gruesome? I thought you'd be pleased.
All right, Al. Sorry to have taken up your precious time. I'd better find myself another press agent. One without a sense of humor.
Cool off, Greg. Have a chair and give me 5 minutes for a lucid explanation.
Is this a gag?
No, it's on the level. Listen and see how foolproof my idea is. First, what's your real name?
Well, I don't use it anymore. Gregory Townsend is sufficient for your purposes.
I have to know your real name. Now, what is it?
Well, all right. It's Michael Armbruster.
Fine. It'll fit perfectly. Now, here's my plan. You're to rent a room under the name of Michael Armbruster.
Yes?
I want you to live there for 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
Change your face with makeup so that the landlady or the other roomers won't recognize you as Gregory Townsend. Then I want you to do this.
Sergeant Callahan, 13th Precinct.
I want to report a murder. Don't ask me who this is, but listen to what I say carefully. Go to 2219 South Grove Street. In the rear room on the third floor, you'll find the body of Michael Armbruster.
What's that address again? Matthew, check this call.
I won't repeat the address. It's useless to trace this call. I'm not the murderer, and that's all I have to say.
Hello. Hello. Emergency. Get me the district attorney's office.
Hello, Greg. Mind if I sit down?
No. Help yourself, Al. Well, what do the papers say?
Look for yourself, Greg. The front pages are full of it.
Huh. Well, what's our next move?
Just sit tight. I'm running the show and guarantee when the time is right, I'll tip off the cops and send them after Armbruster's murderer.
Oh, I'm getting worried, Al. Maybe we shouldn't have done it. What if something goes wrong?
Oh, relax, Greg. The whole thing's airtight. There's not a chance of a slip. How can a guy murder himself? Just look at this story. The police and District Attorney Ford remain baffled today as to the solution of the murder of Michael Armbruster. In response to an anonymous phone call, the police investigated Armbruster's room, but upon their arrival, it was discovered that the body had disappeared. Among the clues found were a blood-stained jacket, a wristwatch with the initials GT, and an unsigned letter to Armbruster threatening his life. There, Greg, what do you think of that?
Gosh, it sounds too real.
Naturally, that's the way I planned it. The police have got to think it's real or we won't even get a line in the Pleasant Valley Gazette. Well, what's the matter? Worried about your watch?
Yes, I didn't know about that letter.
Oh, well, I forgot to tell you. I wrote it.
What's in it?
The usual kind of stuff. He did you wrong, so you were out to get him. I left it unsigned to make it tougher for the police.
You didn't forget anything, did you?
Not a thing. It's a terrific mystery. The whole town's talking about it. Why, Armbruster's a celebrated character.
What about Townsend?
Anytime now, Greg. Anytime now.
What do you mean?
You see that rather determined-looking gentleman walking this way? The one with the two policemen?
Yeah.
Well, Greg, old pal, that is the district attorney.
I'd better get out of here.
Sit down. Don't act like a murderer.
What should I say?
The DA will let you know.
I beg your pardon, gentlemen.
Not at all. What can we do for you?
My name is Ford, district attorney.
How do you do?
Hi.
I'm looking for an actor by the name of Gregory Townsend.
Friend of yours?
Not exactly.
Well, this is him.
Are you Townsend?
Why, yes. Yes, I am.
Will you come with me, please?
What's wrong?
We'd like to question you about the murder of Michael Armbruster.
Better go quietly, Greg. It'll be best.
Shut up, you fool.
All right, Sergeant. Take him in tow. I think we've got our murderer.
Come along, Townsend.
Don't let go of me. I didn't do it, I tell you. I didn't do it.
Hello, Townsend.
Ford, you can't keep me in here. I tell you, I'm innocent.
You're playing your role quite expertly, Townsend. Your dramatic performance and certainty. But as a denial of your guilt is strictly on the ham side.
You have no evidence.
The initials we found engraved on the watch in Armbruster's room match yours.
As well as several million others. That's no proof.
The letter to Armbruster, the one that threatened his life, was written by an actor.
Maybe it was. But you haven't got a case unless you find the body. I remember that from my last play. There's a murder mystery.
You do have a good memory, don't you?
Well, am I right?
Perhaps, Townsend. We're looking for the body, and I can assure you it'll be found. In the meantime, I'm holding you here on suspicion of murder. When you decide to confess, let me know. It'll save us both a great deal of trouble. Oh, by the way, the newspapers have begun to treat you rather unkindly. I'm afraid your acting career is a thing of the past, assuming, of course, that you're ever freed by the court.
What?
I'll send in some papers. You can read the bad news for yourself.
Ford, wait a minute.
Yes?
You see...
Well, what is it, Townsend?
Nothing, Ford. Nothing.
This isn't a bad setup, Grig. You look very comfortable.
Oh, cup of clowning, Al. How's it coming?
There's enough publicity for 100 scrapbooks. Oh, you're a cinch for that John Miller play.
Fine. Now, when do I get out of here?
Get out? Oh, well, that'll be a little while yet, Grig.
What do you mean, a little while? District Attorney was just here, and he thinks I'm guilty.
So what? You know you're not. There hasn't even been a murder. Oh, boy, will he do a slow burn when the story breaks in the papers.
Ford also said the papers were beginning to pan me. Is that true?
Well, a little, Greg. Some of the boys are knocking, but that's because it makes a better story. That's nothing to worry about. You've just got to hold on a little longer.
But I am worried, Al. We're playing with something big.
Now, look, Greg, I'm the idea boy. I got you into this, and I'll get you out. The net result of the whole thing is going to make you a famous guy. Why, you'll have every producer on Broadway eating out of your hand.
Oh, gosh, I don't know, Al. Gone too far. Maybe we ought to show our hand.
Who's been feeding you that dialogue, Greg? It's all wet. Now, you listen to me. We haven't hit the cream of the press notices yet. I've never made a dime out of you, but I've always thought you had talent. Keep your faith in my judgment, Greg. You won't be sorry.
I know you're trying to sell me, Al, but I have a hunch it's down the river. And if my hunch gets too strong, Al, I'm going to talk to Ford.
Of you to take me driving, Mr. Henley.
It's a pleasure, Valentine, honey. After the cares of the day, there's nothing like a cool evening ride with one's favorite female companion.
How's your friend Gregory Townsend?
Don't you read the papers, Valentine?
Well, that's what I mean.
He's where your friend Dave Anderson ought to be.
Why don't you like him, Mr. Henley?
He's been squeezing money out of me like a leech.
Do you owe it to him?
Oh, not exactly, Valentine. Ever hear of blackmail?
Oh, how exciting.
Oh, yeah? Well, honey, right now, I've got my mind on murder.
Oh, Mr. Henley, you mustn't.
Don't worry, Valentine. I'm only doing my job. Don't you remember? I'm press agent for the murder.
The spinning threads of the web in which Gregory Townsend found himself imprisoned were more unbelievable than any play in which he'd ever acted. In answer to a desperate plea for publicity, Al Henley, his press agent, had conceived the idea of Gregory's committing a counterfeit murder, the supposed victim to bear his real name, Michael Armbruster. But Gregory's ardor for the pretense cooled when the district attorney gave every indication of believing the story.
Well, that's the whole story, Mr. Ford.
You're a strange sort of fellow, Townsend.
What do you mean?
You expect me to believe a story such as the one you've just told me.
But it's the truth, I swear it.
Why, it's fantastic. A man murdering himself.
Now listen to me, Ford. I am Michael Armbruster. Gregory Townsend is only my stage name.
Will the landlady identify you as Armbruster?
Well, no, I purposely wore makeup.
You've covered all the angles, haven't you? Unfortunately, Townsend, your story is too incredulous for me to believe. Not even a wild-eyed press agent could create such a tale.
But that's exactly how it happened. I needed publicity, and Al Henley, my press agent, invented the whole thing.
How do you account for your watch being in the room?
It was my room, I tell you. I rented it.
Only you wore makeup, so it wasn't you. Yes, I know.
I don't know what else I can do to prove the whole thing to be a piece of fiction. There isn't anybody. Surely that should convince you.
But you're wrong, Townsend. There is a corpse.
What? What are you talking about?
I said there's a body. The body of Michael Armbruster.
Oh, you're crazy.
We've been told where it is. You shouldn't have trusted Al Henley. He's decided to tell us where you've hidden the body of the man you murdered. I have a car waiting. We'll soon discover who's been telling the truth. We should be there any minute.
Where am I supposed to have hidden my victim?
Behind a large outdoor advertising sign.
So Sounds like a nice quiet retreat for a dead man.
That looks like the place up ahead.
Well, there's a sign there at any rate.
Would you prefer to point out the exact spot where the body is hidden?
I couldn't do it with a Ouija board.
As you wish, Townsend. This way.
Speaking of publicity, Ford, this won't do you any good when the papers find out you've been persecuting an innocent man.
Good heavens.
What's wrong? Oh, that's horrible.
Well, there's your answer, Townsend. Will you confess now?
No, no, I didn't do it.
Look for yourself, Townsend. This body has been burned. The ebony ring on the finger with the initials M.A.
I've never seen it before.
This is the body of Michael Armbruster. I'm charging you with his murder, and so help me, I'm going to get a conviction.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Mr. Hanley. Just call when you're ready to leave.
Hello, Greg.
You get out of here before I commit a real murder.
Take it easy,
Greg. Take it
easy.
Why, you cheap little crook. Do you know you're framing me with a murder?
Well, it's all according to plan,
Not
Greg.
Not my plan. I want you to get me out of here. The DA is putting me on trial next week.
Exactly, and that's where I'm going to spring my big surprise.
Where'd that body come from?
A shady character I know tipped me off to it. The guy can supply any kind of body on order.
He'd make you an excellent partner. But first, you've got to get me out of this.
At the trial, Greg, at the trial. It'll be the biggest news story of the century. I can just see those headlines.
Oh, I don't know why I should trust you. I have a feeling you've got something up your sleeve.
Oh, relax, Greg. You've got a nice room here and three meals a day. That should be heaven to any actor. Believe me, you haven't a thing in the world to worry about.
This court is now in session. The district attorney will continue with his presentation.
Thank you, Your Honor. I should like to call as my final witness Al Henley. Now, Mr. Henley, what was your relationship with the defendant?
I was his public relations counselor.
Did he usually confide in you?
All the time. I gave him advice on his career.
Tell the court, Mr. Henley, what you know about the murder of Michael Armbruster.
Well, I'd known for quite a while that Townsend and Armbruster weren't exactly on speaking terms. One night, about a month ago, Townsend came to see me at my apartment.
Yeah?
He'd had a good deal to drink and was talking pretty freely. He told me he'd killed Armbruster that night and that he was hiding the body out at the spot where I told the district attorney it could be found.
Why did you keep this information quiet for so long?
I wanted to protect Townsend. No man likes to convict his friend.
You're lying, you rat. You're lying.
Order in the court. Order in the court. The prisoner will remain silent.
Stop him. He's lying. I didn't kill anyone. I didn't kill anyone.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict?
We have, Your Honor. We find the defendant guilty of murder in the first degree.
It's too bad about Gregory Townsend, Mr. Henley. He looked like such a nice fellow.
Well, Leslie Valentine, you can never tell by looking at a guy what's going on inside him.
When's the execution set for?
Sometime next week.
Are you going up to see him?
No, it's hurt me too much to have to watch him suffer.
The paper sure gave it a lot of publicity.
I guarantee that for my clients, Valentine, honey.
Well, anyone can get their name in the papers if they murder someone, Mr. Kelly.
That's right, Valentine. But how many people can get their name in the paper if they don't commit a murder?
That's not so easy, is it?
That's right. Well, now you're talking, baby. But I did it for Gregory Townsend. He was my client, and I always please my clients. I'd like to do the same for Dave Anderson, but I don't think he'll be around anymore. One more other thing.
Mr. Anderson is a nice man. You shouldn't talk that way about him.
All right, Valentine. Let's talk about you. I'll get your name in the papers, but in another way. You're not ready for courtroom scenes. Besides, the district attorney might believe you.
It's nice of you to visit me, Valentine.
I'm glad you remember me, Mr. Townsend.
You shouldn't keep such unpleasant company, my dear. You're liable to wind up playing the lead in a murder courtroom.
That's funny. Mr. Henley said exactly the same thing to me yesterday.
Well, you just be careful, Valentine. He's also liable to get your name in the papers. And that, I'm afraid, is a blood brother to the kiss of death.
Why, that's another coincidence.
Huh? What do you mean?
Mr. Henley and I were discussing that yesterday also.
How does it happen you decided to visit me?
Mr. Henley said it would hurt him too much to see you. But I don't think that's the real reason. I think he feels bad because he's hiding something.
What do you mean, Valentine?
He said it was easy for people to get their names in the papers if they kill someone. But he said he got yours in the papers and you didn't kill anyone.
He told you that?
Yes. And I'm worried about my friend, Dave Anderson. Mr. Henley doesn't like him. And he said yesterday I wouldn't be seeing him anymore.
Valentine, do you know Mr. Ford, the district attorney?
No, but I've seen his picture.
How would you like to meet him?
Oh, now don't go to any trouble.
Oh, it's no trouble at all, I assure you. It'll be a pleasure.
Well, what should I say to him?
Just smile and tell him exactly what Mr. Henley told you yesterday.
You mean about how to get your name in the papers?
Yes, that's it. Will you do that for me?
Sure, why not?
Valentine, honey, whether it's February or not, you're more than welcome. Think you had the guts to show up here, Al.
Believe me, Greg, I just like jails more than you. I hope there were no hard feelings.
Well, of course not. You're only paying for a murder you committed with my life.
You should have been a comedian, Greg. The serious stuff never did suit your personality. Well, keep up the good spirits. You're a credit to the acting profession. Laugh, clown, laugh. Or should I say, sucker?
You were right the other day, Mr. Henley.
Which bright thing was that, Valentine, honey?
When you said you couldn't tell by looking at a guy what was going on inside him.
Yeah, I said that all right. Did you try it out?
I certainly did, Mr. Henley. Why, only yesterday, to look at Mr. Ford, you would never think that he had a sense of humor.
You mean Ford, the DA?
Yes.
What were you doing with him? Come on, quick. What were you doing with him?
Henley, you're hurting my arm.
Don't twist the lady's arm, Al. It might come off.
This is a private party, Ford.
Thanks for the invitation. I'd like to join the fun.
Oh, no use in saying no, huh?
No.
All right. What is it?
Why, ever since Valentine told me your philosophy about publicity, I've been doing a little checking.
And?
I found that I haven't been particularly brilliant on this case. For example, the ring with the initials M.A. that I found on the body of the corpse was made of ebony.
Pretty color.
And a very pretty wood. The important factor that I completely overlooked was that if the ring were on the body when it was burned, why, the ring would have been consumed also. In other words, the ring was obviously placed on the hand after the murder had been committed.
That's very good, Mr. Ford.
Thank you, Valentine.
Shut up, Valentine.
With that clue, Henley, the rest was simple.
Okay, Ford, you win. Dave Anderson was blackmailing me for every cent I earned. I figured I could put him out of the way and make you think that the charred body was really Armbruster. Well, goodbye, Valentine, honey. I'm going away. All right, Ford. I'm ready to change places with my former client.
It was very nice of you to invite me here, Mr. Townsend.
Well, I can't think of anyone else I'd rather celebrate with, Valentine. After all, you saved my life.
Oh, it wasn't anything much. I just listened to Mr. Henley, and he practically gave it all away.
You got even for the killing of your friend, Dave Anderson.
I only wish I could have found out in time, before Mr. Henley got to him.
Well, it's all over now, Valentine. The best thing to do is to forget. Why, you're a famous girl now. Your name's in every newspaper in the country.
Yeah. Wasn't that funny, though? Mr. Henley always said he'd get me in the headlines.
He kept his word, Valentine, even if he had to commit murder to do it.
Thank you.
shadows and stillness. Mystery weaves a spell of strangest fascination, charging the mind with doubts and fears. For mystery is a strange companion, a living memory in the haunting hour.
The Haunting Hour, on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated broadcast from 1945, directed by one Edwin Wolfe, who directed every broadcast of the show. He was also heard in an acting role on Suspense in May of 1960 in a story called Bitter Grapes. This is an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for Lights Out with the gripping story Come to the Bank, a CBS broadcast from November 17th, 1942.
Ionized Yeast presents Lights Out, Everybody.
It is later than you think.
Lights Out brings you stories of the supernatural and the supernormal, dramatizing the fantasies and the mysteries of the unknown. We tell you this frankly, so if you wish to avoid the excitement and tension of these imaginative plays, we urge you, calmly but sincerely, to turn off your radio now. Mr. Obler, there's something I've been intending to ask you ever since the beginning of Lights Out series. What is the meaning of the phrase used each week, "It is later than you think"?
Well, Frank, no one knows who first said it, but for centuries, sundials have borne that phrase. It is later than you think, and the words are as true today as they've always been. The meaning? That the human lifespan is short and time is fleeting, and each of us have fewer moments than we think to live, learn, work, and perhaps mend our ways.
Well, that's very interesting, especially in these strenuous days. But tell us, what's the title of tonight's Lights Out play?
As I predicted last week, Come to the Bank. It's not in order, but the story of a woman who, for strange reasons soon apparent, is determined to get us to the bank.
And now?
Lights out, everybody.
Please, would you come to the bank with me? Please. I've asked so many people, but they won't listen to me. You, will you come to the bank with me? No, don't turn your head. Please don't go away. Listen, if I tell you very carefully why I want you to come to the bank with me, you will come, won't you? He's locked up in there. He can't get any air. No, don't get excited. I didn't say he was locked up in the vault. All they've got in their vault is money. I don't care about money. All I care about is him. I didn't mean to tell you. All right, I did. You've got to come to the bank with me and help me. It's Fred Roth. He's in the bank and he can't get out. What are you laughing about? That's not so funny. I tell you, he's in the bank and he can't get out. He's been in there for, I think it's 3 weeks. Blast you, stop laughing. Please listen to me. I'll tell you all about it from the start. I'm a school teacher. At the Madison High School, I teach physics. It's a rational science. Cause and effect. Cause and effect. Mr. Roth teaches in the same school. Psychology. The way of the human mind. But that's not an exact science, is it? The human mind is not exact at all. And that started it. That's what started it. Mr. Roth said to me,
"Well, speaking quite frankly and candidly, Miss Moss, I don't think very much of your exact sciences."
"Two and two always add up to four, Mr. Roth."
"Not where the human mind is concerned."
"I don't understand."
"Well, it is my profound conviction that the potentialities of the human mind and body have never been realized by any human creature."
"But there have been great men. Plato, Lincoln, so many scientists."
"Yes, but only fractional greatness, using perhaps one-tenth of the power latent within themselves. It's all a matter of concentration. Thomas Edison used perhaps one iota more concentration than the average man and became one of the great inventors of all time. I tell you, Miss Moss, if men would concentrate their minds to the limit, the universe would be theirs.
That's a very innocent thought, isn't it? Just a teacher talking about the human mind. I thought nothing of it. Mr. Roth was such an intense young man. I liked his intensity.
Just think what could happen if a man could bring his mind to the proper point of concentration. He could move objects with his mind. Yes, why not? Think that a table should move, and it would move.
Mr. Roth.
No. Think that he wanted to be a certain place, and he would be there. Men conceived this civilization just by a thought, and here it is. All is power of thought over matter. A man thinks a book before the book exists. He thinks a house, and only then the house can be. All is power of mind over matter.
I liked to watch his eyes while he talked. They were so bright and burning. And his mouth as he talked. The way it twisted. I couldn't help liking Mr. Roth, could I? We had dinner together once.
Will you have coffee with your dinner or later?
Well, what did you say?
The waiter wanted to know if you wanted coffee with your dinner.
Oh, no coffee.
Oh, we miss you.
Very nice of you to have dinner with me, Mr. Roth.
Oh, on the contrary, I'm grateful to you. You're a very good listener.
Thank you.
I've done a great deal of work in the week since I last talked to you.
Have you? Please tell me.
Well, it isn't exactly work. It's more of a decision.
Yes?
Yes, I've come to the decision to stop theorizing. Yes, I've decided to put what I believe into practice.
I don't know what you mean.
No, it's quite simple. The powers of concentration. I've decided to put into practice...
Monsieur, the fruit juice is for the lady.
Well, oh, yes, for the lady. Concentration, Miss Moss. I've decided to put into practice my theory of concentration. I don't want to anticipate, but I expect wonderful results, Miss Moss. I might even say unbelievable results.
Unbelievable results. Oh, must I tell you more? Please, come with me to the bank. All right, I'll tell you the rest. The day after he talked to me in the restaurant, Mr. Roth didn't come to school. I know that because at lunchtime he wasn't in his usual place in the cafeteria. And when I asked, they told me that he suddenly had taken leave of absence and that an extra teacher was taking over his classes. I was very disappointed. A week went by, 2 weeks. I decided to go see him. I took a few days off from my work. I found out his home number. Friday morning, I bought a new dress, very becoming one. Then I went to visit Mr. Roth. I was certain he wouldn't be angry with me. It's perfectly proper that I call on him as a friend.
Yes, Mr. Roth is at home. He has the 2 back rooms. He has not been out of there for a week. Won't even let me go in to clean up. He go right ahead. Head of the staircase and to the right.
Mr. Roth, are you in there? It's Miss Moore. Could I speak to you for a moment?
Standing there knocking, I suddenly realized that the door was ajar. Was he? But he didn't answer, and yet the landlord had said he was at home. I pushed the door open farther and glanced through the opening.
Mr. Roth! Mr. Roth! Dead! Oh, no, I...
No, I'm alive.
Oh, I thought... Oh, Mr. Roth, your face, the way you look, what...
No. Water. Glass.
Yes, yes. Here. Oh, you are sick.
I'm not sick. Water.
Here, drink it. I'll hold it. Doctor, I'll call a doctor.
No, wait.
But you're ill.
Listen to me.
Yes.
I'm not sick.
Well, then what?
I told you.
Well, I don't know.
I've been sitting here for a week.
Sitting for a week?
Concentration. Practicing concentration. Concentration. The experiment was most successful. Yeah, most successful. I've proven that I can do what some of the Orientals profess to do. Slow down through concerted willpower, the essential life processes. A week without food and water. Is that not a triumph, Miss Moss?
Well, I don't know. Mr. Roth, why do you do these things?
I'm trying to explain it to you simply. The human thoughts are like the rays of the sun, spreading in all directions. By the use of a lens, the rays of the sun can be focused on one point. And instead of warmth, there is a focal point of intense light that can burn its way through all obstacles. And so it is with human thoughts. If, through concentration, a man could focus them on one point, he would be a god among men. I tell you, Miss Moss, that I am confident that I, through training, can become that one man in a million. Even as muscles can be trained, so I am training my mind. And the day when my training is complete, I will be able to do anything I desire. You hear me? Anything. Anything. Anything.
When he said that, thin and weak and tired as he was, his eyes looked at me and I was afraid. For him. I made up my mind right then. The first thing was to get him out of that room. He ate, rested, and then went out with me.
I don't see why I let you talk me into this, Miss Moss. I have so much work to do.
The walk will do you good.
But where are we going?
Well, first I want you to come to the bank with me.
Beg your pardon?
Well, you see, I've been thinking of taking a little vacation, and I need some money. Going to withdraw some.
Oh, I see.
I too want to get off some place where I can concentrate.
Well, yes, most important.
Yes. Have you thought about going out to the country?
These buildings, Miss Moss. Look at them. Steel and concrete. So firm and so solid. So enduring. You know something, Miss Moss?
Walking so fast, I...
Once upon a time, they were only an idea in man's mind. Perhaps even now they have no solidity, but are just ideas hanging in air through which a man with single-mindedness of purpose could walk as easily as if he were walking through air. Do you understand me, Miss Moss?
Well, I'm not sure. The country would be a wonderful place to work. Now, wouldn't it, Mr. Roth?
We went into the bank. He kept talking about the powers of concentration. I hardly listened to him. All I could think about was that somehow I had to get him into a new environment. The foyer of the building where the bank was, we went in. People, elevators. Suddenly, Mr. Roth stopped. He stared at the wall. I said...
Mr. Roth, what are you looking at?
This. This is the time.
Time? Time for what?
I told you. When my subconscious reached the proper point of incubation, I would know that my powers had reached the point where I could do anything.
Mr. Roth,
anything,
please,
I tell
let
you.
Go.
Well, this is the time. Now, I must make use of that power now.
No, please. What are you going to do?
That marble wall. Straight ahead. I say I can walk through it.
No, please, stop joking.
I will walk through.
No, Mr. Roth, come back. Don't. Ah! Mr. Roth.
What?
The wall. Down.
Who?
Ah!
Oh, what?
Mr. Roth. Yes. Mr. Roth, he walked through the wall. You hear me? He walked through the wall.
You sit there smug and self-certain, don't you? It couldn't have happened. But listen, you pinhead mind, I tell you it did. I saw it with my own eyes. Mr. Roth walked right toward that marble wall and he went into it and then he was gone. Do you hear me? Gone. But I mustn't call you names and make you angry, must I? Because you must come to the bank with me. Yes, I'll tell you more of just what happened on that day.
All right.
Say, I never heard of such a...
Now, look, lady, take it easy.
Get out of my way. The wall. He walked through that wall. I tell you, he walked through that wall.
For Pete's sake, please.
He said he'd do it. He did do it. He walked through that wall.
Lady,
I tell you, he walked through that wall.
Don't make a disturbance.
Let go of me. Don't hold me back. I gotta get to him. Mr. Ross. I gotta get to Mr. Ross.
Well, this lady, all at once, she screamed, and now she's...
Come to let go of me. Mr. Ross, he concentrated his mind. He said he'd walk through that wall, and he did.
What?
Yes, he did.
That's it, Mrs.
Searle. Let go of me. That wall, Mr. Ross went through that wall.
My dear woman, are you out of your mind?
I've got to get to him, Mr. Ross. I've got to get
to him. Stop making that noise. Stop it. That wall is solid. Solid concrete faced with marble. You'd better go home and stop disturbing the peace. Show her to the door, Regan.
So they put me out. I stood in the street. I didn't know what to do. And then I knew. I would wait there until Mr. Roth came back. And he would come back. He'd gone through the wall and he must have come out on the other side. And now he would walk around the building and come back and meet me there. So I waited.
Good night, George. See you in the morning.
I waited a long time.
Are you waiting for something, lady? The bank's closed, you know. I've seen you standing here ever since I got on my beat, so I thought I'd talk to you.
A long time. It began to rain. I stood there in the rain. Mr. Roth. And then a terrible thought. What if he... I went to the door of the bank building. It was locked.
Let me in. Please, let me in. Listen to me. He just let me in, Mr. Roth.
Hey, lady, what? Don't you know the bank's been closed for hours?
I've got to get in. I've got to. I've
now,
got to get in.
Now, take it easy, you. Hey, aren't you the one that's been standing out
here? Let go of me. Mr. Roth is in there.
Now, lady.
I will get in.
Hey, the door.
Let go of me. Mr. Roth, I've got to get in.
I'll be out of here acting like this.
I will get in. I'll kick this door. I will get in.
Kicking the door in. Are you coming along with me?
Let go of me.
Did we get in to see Mr. Roth that night? No.
Order in the court. Prisoner will be held for further examination. Next case.
I tried to tell them, Mr. Roth, but no one would listen to me. All night. And the next terrible day, no one would listen.
Now tell me, do you have dreams, Miss Marsh?
Asking me questions over and over.
Do you think that people dislike you?
Over and over.
Have you often seen Mr. Roth or other people disappear?
Over and over.
When did you first begin to have these hallucinations?
But when I tried to tell him about Mr. Roth, he started to say terrible things to me.
The fact of the matter is, Mr. Roth has disappeared. It is the opinion of the police that he decamped with this woman's money. Yes, took her money and ran off.
I
didn't care what they said. I had to get to the bank. You know why? Mr. Roth had started for the wall, and I had seen him go through it, and he hadn't come around to meet me. So there was only one answer. He was still in the wall. And while Mr. Roth was in the wall, they were keeping me in this hospital. I had to get out.
How are you resting now, Miss Moss?
Miss Moss, where? Window. Nurse, the woman in this room. She's gone. Out of the window. Nurse. Miss Moss is gone.
Got away. In the street. Still raining. I ran along the dark streets until I was at the bank. Closed. There was a dark doorway, another building. I hid in the dark and waited all through the night until morning, until they opened the doors of the bank. I went into the bank. I walked toward the wall. That wall. I wanted to run to it, but I walked. Then I was there. The very wall he'd gone into. Mr. Roth, are you in there? It's Miss Moss, Ada Moss. Mr. Roth, please, if you're in there, answer me. They'll see me standing here by the wall talking, and they won't let me stand here. Mr. Roth, please, I've got my ear close to the wall. If you're in there, answer me. I can hear you. You are on the wall. I was right. You did walk into the wall and stay there. Yes, yes, but what are you saying? I can't understand you. Please, Mr. Ross, speak so I can understand you. Yes, I understand. I will get you out of there.
Help! Help, there's a man in the wall. Help me get him out. Mr. Roth, you hear? I'll get you help. Hurry, people. Bring axes and picks. There's a man in the wall. Mr. Roth's in the wall.
They put me back in the hospital. They didn't believe me. They didn't help Mr. Roth. I was very sick. I don't know how many days I was in the hospital. Then I was all right. They let me out.
And this is your last warning, Miss Moss. You are to stay away from the bank. You are to behave yourself as a good, intelligent citizen you normally are. Your last warning, Miss Moss.
And all the time, Mr. Roth was in that war, waiting for me to help him. And there was so little time left. A man such as Mr. Roth, powers of concentration. He could and did perform a miracle, walking through a war. But even conserving his strength and breath and the way he said, slowing down the vital life processes, how long do you think he could live entombed in that wall? I had to get to him. When I walked by the bank, hiding in the crowd so they wouldn't see me, I saw that there was a policeman there. They put a policeman there just to keep me out. I had to figure out some way to get in there. Tell Mr. Roth to keep alive, that I was working to help him. I had to figure out a way. There's a store across the street. A store selling paints. That was the answer.
Something for cleaning?
Of course, madam. How much do you think you'll need? Oh, I suggest a pint. We have it here in bulk. Open it? Sure, sure. Hey, see, it's standard cleaning fluid. Lady, no. No, that match. Look out. Don't. It's inflammable. Don't. Help. Fire. Grab that woman. She set fire to the store. Fire.
In a few moments, everyone was so busy that I was quite free to go into the bank. In a few seconds, my ear was against the wall. Mr. Roth, I'm back. They tried to keep me away from you, but I'm back. Mr. Roth, can you hear me? Alive. Yes, still alive. Oh, Mr. Roth, what can I do? What? Yes, I will. They won't stop me this time. Something. Get something and tear down the wall. Fire axe. Off the wall. Mr. Roth, look. If you could see, I got a fire axe. Could they help you? Will you get out? We'll get you out. Yes, I will get you out. The mob is cracking, Mr. Roth. I will get to you. Get the air to you. No one will stop me now. They don't want to help you. But I'm helping you.
Give me that axe.
Oh, no, you won't stop me. I've got to help Mr. Roth.
Give me that axe.
I'll give it to you.
Lady,
I told you not to stop me.
The policeman.
I told you not to stop me.
You killed the policeman.
No, I'll kill you. I'm locked up now. They locked me up. You've been my first visitor in weeks. Weeks. Do you know what that means? All these days he's been in that war, holding himself alive. With all his will. But sooner or later, if he thinks I'm not going to help him, he'll give up hope. And he'll lose his will to live. And suddenly he'll die. Do you hear me? He'll die. Please make them let me go and come and help me save Mr. Roth. If you don't help me, it will always be on your conscience, won't it? At night when you're alone and you can't sleep, you'll open your eyes. And you'll see Mr. Roth entombed in that wall. But it won't be Mr. Roth anymore. Just the bones of a man. Bones and dead, decaying flesh. And worms. And the skull will talk to you. And ask you, why didn't you help me? So I ask you again, please... Please, won't you come to the bank?
Oh, Mr. Obler, a man living in a bank wall.
Well, don't let that prevent you from going to the bank and buying a few war bonds.
No, seriously. Do you really believe a human being could possibly accomplish such a feat and then keep himself alive by sheer willpower?
Well, Frank, certain Hindu cults have been able to obtain unbelievable results in the suspension of the ordinary human bodily functions by fasting and complete immobility. In plain talk, they don't eat, they don't sleep, they sit still, and their pulses drop to the point of what is normally fatal. And yet they live. The human mind, Martin, is a deep, dark power whose potentialities only the future will bring to complete fulfillment.
Well, now what about next week's story?
Title, Chicken Heart. The story, but more about that after just a moment.
And I'll use that moment to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that life doesn't necessarily have to seem hopeless, even if you are miserably thin and weak and nervous. Perhaps you, like thousands of others, Mr. Obler.
Well, somebody told me that next week's play, Chicken Heart, should have been entitled A Brainstorm. I won't deny that. I've never enjoyed writing a story more in my life and never hesitated more about broadcasting it because of its terrifying nature. Brainstorm the story is yes, but don't forget that tomorrow's brainstorm may be the truth the day after tomorrow. But truth or fiction, Chicken Heart, next week.
Yes, Lights Out will come to you again next Tuesday at the same time. Be sure to listen to Arch Obler's amazing story of Chicken Heart. And if you need more vitamin B and iron, be sure to try ironized yeast. The one and only ironized yeast. With the big letters IY on the package and on each tablet.
Columbia Broadcasting System.
Lights Out, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 17th of November, 1942 on CBS. Wrapping up this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for tuning in.